Long Way Home, the podcast of Paul Burkhart.
This is Paul Burkhart. A couple of confessions at first to open up. I did the entire first episode in one take, and I've even still not listened to it at all. I know for a fact that it was probably the most awkward for everyone experience I could possibly imagine is for audio. A lot of different reasons for that, I think. It's always good for me to do a first-time mess-up on things. Usually, if I do really well at something the first time, the next time I do it, it is the biggest piece of trash you could ever imagine. I just do horribly at it. But with other things, things that I really do not do very well the first time, it gives me time to think and reflect on the things that didn't go so well before and how to change it. And I think this last experience recording the first episode has been a good experience. Me accomplishing one of those goals I talked about, which is learning my own style, what works best for me. And I'm realizing that in that first episode, I was using show notes that I had typed up that were kind of half outline, half manuscript. So it was very strange. I'd read like a full line or half a paragraph and then have to ad-lib a large section of it after that. As you can probably hear, the road noises outside. Still haven't figured out a way to not do that. And the fans are going crazy on my Mac, so... Maybe with time, that'll get better. I'm going to experiment with this one. The only thing I've read is the actual post that we'll be looking at today, which is a post called This Is Strange. And it's the first blog post I ever wrote. I started the blog and wrote this first post the night that I found my church in Richmond. Which had been a semester-long process, which I'll get to that later. Go back to that first episode. I think I'll keep it up. I don't think I'll redo it. It'll always be fun to kind of go back and see how far I've come with that first episode. So, for those that actually did listen, I haven't actually checked out my numbers. I may have actually lowered in listenership, but we'll see. This post, other than reading the blog post I wrote those years ago, I have no outline. I have no planned statements or manuscript that I'm working off of. I'm just kind of free-flowing and seeing what's going to happen and what will turn out. So we'll see how these parts come together, and we'll see how this one works, see if I can find some middle ground. Well, onto the blog post. This is the first post I ever wrote for anything. It started the whole process of me writing all the blogs that I have since then. It was written on December 6th of 2004. Now, that was the week before we left for winter break. And it was several weeks after the election that November. That was the second Bush election with John Kerry. And I mentioned in the first episode, if you got to it, VCU, the college I went to for undergrad, it was a very, very, very liberal setting for me. And at the time, I was this fundamentalist, Southern Baptist right-wing conservative, like to the max. And then I go into this setting and, of course, encounter nothing but opposition. Understandably so. And there were times I could have been a bit more sensitive to things. Going along with that territory was all the debates. All the conversations, all the things that carried with it. And as the election drew closer after I got into school that September, into the dorm, the tension mounted higher and higher and higher. And the conversations got more and more intense. And that night, there were moments that looked like John Kerry was going to win, and people screaming expletives down the hall to me, you know, in your face, and just... going nuts over these things. And the day after the election, everyone was in mourning on campus. There were people crying in the middle of the street because Bush won and all these things. So, and both my frustration and angst over that period of time is represented in this post, and also my proud Bush flag waving tendencies there. That's the political side of things. There's also represented towards the end, a religious component. At the time, my time in the dorm had consisted mostly of political discussion and discourse since I had first got there, with only a little bit of religious talk. After this election, though, and after I found this church, and in a way my faith seemed to be awakened, those talks got much more intense. They became much more present. They became much more of a reality for me. And it was in those times, subsequent to this article, that I actually really learned how to articulate my faith, and it became stronger. And you see the hints of that in what I was saying about this. But another interesting thing that I, you know, see I write is this idea that I had at the time of religion not being based at all on emotions, but only on reason and rationale and thought. So at the time, of course, having been in the setting I was in, there was a definite stress on mental capacities, on intellectualism, on rationalism and empiricism, and me trying to support all these political ideas using those means. And of course, I've changed since then. We'll talk more about that at the other end of the post. So, that's the setting for this. So, enjoy the blog post, and I hopefully, maybe this will be the structure I'm going to try this out. Well, give a little background, read the blog post, and then at the end, I'll tell you where I've come since and where my thinking may have changed or shifted a bit. Okay? So, enjoy. This is Strange, posted December 6th, 2004. Well, I finally did it. Succumbed to the will of the masses by creating my own blog. Honestly, it seems like everyone has a blog nowadays. Makes me wonder exactly how many people actually read other people's blogs. More importantly, how many people are actually touched, affected, changed by blogs. Nevertheless, I am a very strong proponent of the concept of the exchange of ideas. I definitely exercised this topic more as election time was approaching. In one particular instance, a hallmate of mine ran out of a room in the dorm into the room where I was in the middle of the typical pre-election scenario. Me, the lone token Southern Baptist conservative on the super-liberal city campus, on the floor with all the art students, arguing about, having a discussion about, politics. This person, upon entering the room, said in response to the previous comment I had made, "Why would you say that? Don't you know that people disagree with you here? The only reason for you to say that is to try and hurt someone, because it's not going to change their minds. It can only hurt them. Anyway, I think politics are stupid. Talking about it gets us nowhere. And," as she looked at me, of course, "some people need to get themselves straight before calling what other people believe wrong." There was a short pause. She walked out of the room. We all just looked at one another and silently decided with our eyes that the discussion was over. Thus, I proceeded to my room, of course, frustrated. Now, not many people know this about me, and since this is my first blog, I feel the secret is still safe. Because I doubt anyone will ever see this post, I'll go ahead and say it. Anyway, when I go into deep thought mode, where my subconscious feels like it's on the verge of a great philosophical thought, I have the tendency to pace around my room, conducting an imaginary discussion, argument, debate, lecture, concert, poetry reading, or sermon to some imaginary audience, sometimes specific, sometimes faceless. As I pace, I pretty much stream my consciousness about whatever topic my mind is contemplating at the time, sometimes out loud, but mostly mouthing words in hushed tones, like you do as you're typing something when no one else is around. On this particular occasion, I was streaming my consciousness, in this fashion, on the topic of having opinions and its ramifications within the concept of the process of idea exchange. This was my thought process. I thought, your opinion is the one thing that nothing on earth can take away. Sure, things can affect it, change it, and remove it, but only if you allow them the freedom to do so. Knowing this, the conclusion could be drawn that our opinions are of the utmost value within ourselves. Actually, I'm going to make this deeper. Change the word opinion to belief. The ramifications of that are much greater. Okay, so, within our own personal spheres, our beliefs are so precious, so personal. They're yours. Heck, they are you. The most important decision concerning their beliefs everyone must make in life, after, of course, what they are in the first place, is to what extent they're going to let them out into the world. What extent they're going to share these beliefs and opinions with others. Now, in my thinking, I've thought through that there are two different ways to express one's belief. The first is through words, just abstract, and the second is through actions, concrete. Now, when it comes to politics, the topic of contemplation that these thoughts stemmed from, one can pretty much figure out what the active and verbal, the abstract and concrete ways of idea exchange would be. The active and the concrete would be voting, working for a campaign, contributing money, parking a tractor in the reflecting pool by the Washington Monument, flying a plane into a building in New York, creating a propaganda film, blowing up an abortion clinic. The verbal, or abstract, would be conducting a debate, conducting a lecture, conducting a sermon, writing a manifesto, writing an editorial, engaging in a discussion, writing an opinion to a politician, preferably without anthrax. Of course, all ways of expression are not right, but they express an opinion nonetheless. Now, of these two different modes of expression, the concrete and abstract, the verbal and active, two kinds of expression can be derived. One way and two way. This concept is the most important to my conclusion. One way expression in both of those ways of communication is where you make an arbitrary statement, be it by your actions or words. It's just when you make those and there's no one there to rebut it or support it. These ways would be like a letter, editorial, yard sign, act of terrorism, or, most important to my discussion, a vote. It is something where you run in, make your statement, then run away without hearing a word about it. Two-way is just as self-explanatory. It's an engagement of ideas between individuals, groups, peoples, nations, societies, or unions. It can also be through either actions or words. It can be a debate, treaty, argument, statement signed by multiple nations, or 18 UN resolutions are never enforced, leaving America alone to prevent World War III and countless more future casualties than we have now. But I digress. Now, here's where my conclusions are drawn. Taking everything into account stated above, I say this to anyone out there who agrees with the girl from that initial confrontation that brought forth these thoughts. You have a right, not only by being an American, but also by being a human, to decide whether or not to express your beliefs, even about others expressing theirs to you. But knowing that beliefs are so critical to being human, it is selfish, despicable, and wrong to humanity to conduct yourself in such a way as to imply that you think you yourself alone in your sphere of belief. In other words, you have every right to pick your mode of expression and how you express your opinions and beliefs. But you must also accept the ramifications of that mode of expression. How this applies to politics is simple. Philosophically speaking, of course, no one has the right to express their belief in a one-way manner by voting unless they are willing to accept the ramifications of that belief that causes their vote. Now, the ramifications of that belief is by its very nature two-way. So, if someone is not willing to stand up, fight for, debate, and keep alive their own beliefs, they should not express it in a selfish one-way mode like voting. If you don't want to express your beliefs, fine. That's not the problem. This goes back to the old adage where, if you don't vote, don't complain. It goes the other way around, too. If you don't express your opinion of the issues of others, then don't vote. I would not mind if the girl said all that she did above and then didn't vote. Then her level of expression would match the level of her mode of expression. But it did not in this case. I know this is still a bit abstract, so here's a metaphor to cinch everything up. I view beliefs in this case are almost like currency. You can't just pump more and more currency into the economic system of a nation. It lowers the value of the money. To maintain the value of the currency, there must be exchange. There must be give and take. Don't just contribute to the system. It's selfish and contributes nothing to humanity and society as a whole. Either watch from the sidelines and give and take nothing, that's your right, or be an active participant in the world of ideas and beliefs and truly know what it means to be a human living to their full potential that knows exactly what they believe and why. It's the same thing with God. Your beliefs and faith only become stronger through the adversity, ridicule, and debates that you engage in with others. Those are the times when God, quotes, removes your dross and purges you of all iniquities. I will never suppress anyone's right to disagree with me and express it. None of the opinions above are based on partisan politics. Heck, even the girl that brought about all this thinking voted for Bush. In case you haven't figured it out, so did I. Proudly. And everyone knew it. Personally, I thrive more in people not agreeing with me than people agreeing with me. That's why I attended Virginia Commonwealth University, probably the most liberal college in Virginia, in the middle of the most liberal area of Virginia, instead of going to Liberty University, the most conservative Southern Baptist college in the East Coast. I, as my dad said once, grow better in thorny soil. And that is true. I guess this has been just a long way to say that blogs can be a good thing. They help contribute to the school of ideas out there in humanity across the globe. As long as there is exchange, I fully believe in this. That's why people can reply to anything I put up. In fact, I'm going to put on my whiteboard on the board in my dorm room right now with my blog address so everyone I know can see this and reply. There. I did it. I tried to keep this blog as void as possible of personal beliefs, except for the philosophical conclusions drawn from my thoughts. But future posts will not be this way in the least. I'm going to use the site primarily as my little space to personally record what God is doing in my life. Not necessarily for anyone else out there. More for myself. Tonight, I finally found a church home here in Richmond that finally did for me what I've been thirsting for so long. It fed my mind more than my heart. Sure, it touched me and it was an amazing experience, but most Christians live their lives from emotional high to emotional high and getting lost somewhere in between. In Isaiah 1, God says, "Let us reason together." God wants our faith based on reason and experience, not emotion. God knows that men cannot live on faith alone, hence why he did miracles. He knew some guy couldn't just walk in and say, "I'm God," and people would believe him. Anyway, the sermon tonight in this church actually was soul-stirring, emotion-welling, but most importantly, very philosophical, very intellectual, very, very deep and mature, and very mentally engaging. It brought me back to this place I needed to be to get the balls once again to be as bold with my faith as I was with my politics. Sure, everyone knows where I stand, but it's not necessarily me. So far, at least to most people here, it's merely a part of me, the part that no one talks about because we all want to stay friends. Well, we are still friends after that heck of an election, so we can still stay friends through this. So, I guess that's it for me. Many of the opinions expressed in this blog will reappear in this site many times in the future, according to whatever thought I have for the day, but I'll try to keep it interesting. God bless. Paul. I decided long before I actually reread it for the first time in years, I had already decided to use this article as the first article I went through on the podcast. When I went back to it, I was surprised at the same time how much I had changed and how much I hadn't. My writing style, though a lot of other people have said it has matured some, it seems very similar to the way it is still today. And even as I was writing it, it seemed like the style of writing was something I would still write today. But this post set a lot of trajectories and set a lot of precedents that I continued on into my blog writing career. The first one was titles with ellipses, you know, the dot, dot, dot afterwards. I just got to tell you, if you look through like a list of all of my old blog posts, so many of them have that little ellipses at the end, and I don't know why. I love that thing. I suppose it just gives it a little bit of a mystery, or tries to draw people in to continue reading past just the title. I don't know. But you'll see that I've done it a lot since then. I still do. The other one was I was really surprised at how many just stylistically speaking still, how many lists I put in. You know, like, the different ways of communicating oneself. There's just lots of lists that I don't know how well that came across as far as listening to it, if it got a little bogged down with that. So I can imagine how it was to read it. But politically, let's start with that. Politically, I definitely have changed quite a bit since this post. I recently went back to my parents' house. They're about to move, and I was helping them clean out the basement of all of my brother's old stuff and different things they had kept for us growing up. And I found this little certificate I'd received in my AP U.S. history class, U.S. government class, that I took senior year of high school before I was about to move to Richmond. And this little certificate, they did some superlatives for the class, and I got voted by the teacher, not even the students, by the teacher, the one in the entire senior class of my school most likely to vote for Bush. Looking back on that now, both me and my family laugh at that. My family does it with a little more frustration and angst than I do. Them still being the proud, thoughtful right-wingers they are. But since then, I feel a lot more balanced, a lot more nuanced, and I consider myself more of an independent. I found myself economically conservative in the old-fashioned sense, and I'm finding myself growing more and more socially liberal, which I find those to be at odds at times, but I'm sure the course of the podcast will discuss those things quite often. But for now, suffice it to say that since then, I have realized that this hardline partisanship that I was holding at the time is insensitive, generally, unthoughtful, generally, and it really is killing the country, I feel, in a way. Now, that's not even to blame either side. Whichever one's not in power is typically acting a little crazier than the other one. But at the time, I was a hardcore Bush fan. I put the sticker, little bumper sticker on my door. I put posters up. I did all this. I never joined the Young Republicans, though, at VCU, which I don't know why I didn't. But maybe it was just to save face and try to tell people I was a little more balanced than I actually was. As far as the discussion at hand, I really used to take myself really seriously. And it kind of scares me just how much thought I put into this small of a thing. I still give thought to these sorts of things, but I usually didn't take up this much space to explain it, this much time. And it was a lot of philosophical rambling. I don't know if it was phrased correctly. I usually write posts in just one sitting all the way through. I don't really plan it out. I just have a thought and I go. And this is kind of what comes out. So I can imagine that's what I did with this one. And as far as this idea of the exchange of ideas, I definitely still value greatly the idea of the exchange of ideas. It's such an essential component of what it means to be human, what it means to live, what it means to live in a community. There's this, I personally think it comes from this, from the image of God within us. You know, the Bible says that we are made in God's image, which means that there are certain attributes that He has that we reflect in who we are and how we relate to others. And there's this doctrine of God that He lives in community within Himself and three persons that interact with one another. And within this Trinity, there are these attributes and there are these affections and delights that all three parts communicate with one another at all times equally. So they all are adoring each other and pouring out glory to one another and outwards at the same time, at all times. And we're made in God's image, and we live in community, like God lives in community in Himself. And we exchange those things that make us who we are, which are these beliefs and opinions. I don't know that I would go as far now as I do in the post, saying that if you're not willing to engage in the discourse or in the arguments or debates, you know, don't vote. It's pretty much the idea that I had here. I don't know if I'd go that far. You know, people have a right to do that and not face any flack for it. I really do think that now, and I respect that. See, anything else that I said that was probably kind of crazy? This whole post was written very soon after a very frustrating conversation that I talked about in the beginning. I still remember it when I was in some intense debate, and the girl ran in down the hall and just said that statement and walked away. And I was really frustrated by that. I don't feel like I'd be as frustrated now, and I was probably very insecure at the time and very not sensitive to her or her background or maybe the experiences she had had with communicating these things. So I doubt she'll ever listen to this or hear it or even know it's her, but if she does, I want to apologize for that. I do feel like people, they're built to express their opinions and beliefs in some way. You know, people express their opinion about themselves just in the way they walk. Everything about us pours out beliefs, opinions, ideas, what we love, what we hate at all times. We're always pouring out. And the Bible calls this worship. And it just depends on what that pouring out is geared towards. That makes up whether or not we're in a proper state before God, an improper state before God. So, I feel like everyone's always doing this outpouring, and it always is showing what you think, what you feel, the things that you're going through. You bear the marks of what's going on inside of you. Jesus says, it's out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. The things we do, the things that our minds do and think about, and the things that our heart dwells on and loves and hates even, is a reflection of an overflow of what's actually in our heart. And so that being the case, it's not like I don't think somebody could stop doing these one-way modes of communication. We're always in some way expressing our opinions about things, and we can't even control it. So I don't think that people can just stop expressing, stop communicating, stop pouring out. That's not how we're made. So that being said, I feel like I think people have a right to not need to receive feedback if they don't want for the involuntary expression of their opinions. Though it is appreciated and though it is wonderful when someone does choose to actually engage. I think that I do agree later on in my post with the idea that it's engagement of ideas, it's exchange of ideas that really does draw us as people and as humans to live to our fullest potential in that community that we live in. On the Christian side of things, that's why church is so essential and why community and accountability is so essential, because it's in that exchange of the things we love, the things we're struggling with, the things we hate, the things that are really affecting us. It's in the sharing of those things that we really do experience the fullness of what God created us to enjoy and be. So, religiously speaking, towards the end I mentioned that this was the night that I found my church. I spent an entire semester trying to find a church. My senior year in high school, it had been this progression. It was the culmination, the climax of this process I'd been going through that made it so that church and religious things became so essential to my spiritual life. Every night of the week, in all seriousness, was full of church things. Monday night was the evangelism group. Tuesday night was, what was Tuesday night's? Leadership meetings. Wednesday night was youth group. Thursday night was other outreach things. Friday nights were, it was nuts. I was sacrificing church for family things. It became an essential part of my religious life, my spiritual life. All these church things. It was meant to be a good thing. Like, it started to have more and more of a prominence in my life because of this awakened desire in me the summer after my junior year, or summer before my junior year of high school, rather. This desire and this appetite that had been awakened within me for the things of God. And frankly, the satisfaction of those desires and those appetites wasn't at home. So I turned to the only place I knew, church, which, as Mark Driscoll said at the conference I went to this past weekend, when a good thing becomes a God thing, it becomes a God where that outpouring, you put it on in it, and you worship it instead of God. When that good thing becomes a God thing, it becomes a bad thing. Church became a bad thing in my life. Religious things became bad things in my life. And God, in his mercy, when I got to VCU, took that away from me. I went to the Black Charismatic Church. I went to the cult. I didn't know it was a cult till later on. I went to the Catholic Church, Episcopalian Church, went to different camps, ministries, all trying to find a church, all trying to find Christians. There was one other Christian in my entire dorm, and he was a very strange fellow. He wouldn't watch movies with people. He wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't go certain places, do certain things. He was a very legalistic man that thought that his righteousness was in what he did not do. And he did not make a good impression. He was that Christian, and I was the other Christian. And I was on the other end of the extreme. I'd be like, oh yeah, Christians can watch those movies, say those words, laugh at those jokes, go to these places, do these things that probably in hindsight was a bit too far, maybe. I began to define how good I was and how well I was being a Christian based on how much I was not like Christians like that other guy. I began to base my righteousness on how many times I could get my non-Christian friends to say, wow, you're not like any other Christian I've ever met. You're actually thoughtful and intellectual. You'll explain things. You'll stay. You'll debate. You'll argue and all these things. And I started to think that I was righteous because of that. I was better. But anyway, because I couldn't find a church, because I couldn't find campus ministry, it was just me and God for that entire semester. From when I first got there, just adversity hit. People started arguing, the debates, the late nights, the fights, the conversations, the having to articulate anything and everything that was going through my head at all times. It was very frustrating, and I had no community, no other Christians, no church, no anything to lean on. It was just me and God, and I praise him for that time. It was his mercy that took that away from me, so I had to lean on him. I had to rely on him, and it was a good thing. But nevertheless, it took an entire semester, and every Thursday night, I would play poker with some friends of mine from high school that also went to VCU, and there was a guy that would play poker with us named Kyle Foster. And he would always leave early from the poker game because he had to play in a band. And I never knew what it was, so I asked him. He said, oh, it was InterVarsity, this Christian campus ministry. And one time, the night that I found out that that's what he was going to each Thursday was also the night that I got out of the game really early. So I went with him. And it was the small groups that I found going to InterVarsity were incredible. There were men that I met there that are still friends today, and that's when a lot of my faith was strengthened, and how I was strengthened, it was reawakened in me, my love for Christ and the Bible and all of these things, and it was a wonderful thing. And through the grapevine, I'd heard about this one church that was only half a block away from my dorm. It was ridiculous. I was going all over the city looking for a church, and just a block away was this Sunday night service. And I went to that Sunday night service, and it changed the rest of my life. I met Robert Green, who's the current pastor of Redemption Hill Church in Richmond, Virginia. You go to redemptionhill.com to look at that. And it was incredible. I made an appointment with him that night to get coffee with him the next day and talk about the doctrine of the church, of that particular church, to see where they stood in different issues and to see how I could become a member. And I was sure that night that this was the place for me. Well, this was written the night before I met with the pastor, and it's kind of funny reading it now, because at the time, for those that know all of the theological terms and everything, I was a cessationist, premillennialist, dispensationalist. I was one of those guys that believed the world was going to end any day now by everyone being raptured and Jesus coming back and Israel becoming prominent again, and the temple being rebuilt, and all these crazy things happening, and Antichrist rising up, and just all these things. You know what? Honestly, I shouldn't say the crazy things. That they're things that a majority of Americans, just Americans, but Americans believe. And you can go through the history of the Christian Protestant Church in America and find out why that is. But anyway, I held those beliefs so strongly. I was a classic Southern Baptist, and I knew how to defend it. I knew all of that. And that next day, the day after I wrote this blog post, I get together with that pastor, and within 5 minutes and a few casual statements he makes, he completely destroys all of that. And it became a process of completely rebuilding my theology, rebuilding my spirituality, and showing me that what I say in this post is not true, that God does want us to be mentally engaged with Him and sermons and with the Bible. But it is to stir our affections, to stir our emotions, to engage with Him as a whole person, not just parts of us. So it was very funny, like, that the night before all these things shifted in my life, I'm saying things in this blog post, like, God wants us to engage with Him with the mind and with reason, in quote unquote not emotion. You know, He wants to engage with Him on all points. So if any of you did read this, know that I don't think that anymore. I suppose lastly, how I talk about how the blog I was starting. I had this little whiteboard in my door that I went out and put the address for my blog up there. I have no idea how many people actually saw this post or how many people actually read it or anything like that. This really did set a lot of trajectories. This post really did. I do see in this a lot of the seeds of future posts and future passionate engagements with the people around me and the God above me and in me and the Word of God before me and all of these things, and for that I'm grateful. And this was the beginning of a journey, so I thought it would be helpful as another beginning to our journey on this podcast. So, if you did enjoy this one, let me know in any way, shape, or form. Comments, you can go to the regular blog and post comment there. Shoot me an email, Facebook, Twitter, any of that stuff. I guess on one more note of business. After this, I won't be going chronologically. I'll be jumping around. I might even be jumping to other blogs that I've had or ever other articles for other sites that I've written. But we'll see. I'm thinking right now that what I'll try to do is do a self-hosted podcast once every other week. Like, this is what I would call self-hosted. But then between that, every other week, I'll do what I mentioned in the previous podcast episode. I'll be posting up sermons or messages or any type of audio that has had a profound impact on me, and I'd like to share with anyone else that is, for whatever reason, listening to this podcast, who's like-minded in some way. So you can find a link to the original post of this on the at www.prodigalpaul.com/podcast, and you can find the regular blog at www.prodigalpaul.com/blog. So feel free to leave comments, let me know what you think. I still haven't received any comments about the intro music, so please let me know. Okay, God bless. Bye.